Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Everything Pup podcast. I'm your host, Holly Montgomery. I wanted to start off this episode by saying that today's topic is a little bit controversial. I know that people have very strong opinions about spaying and neutering dogs, and some of today's conversation might not align with the beliefs amongst the general population of dog owners. No matter your thoughts on the matter, we can all agree that spaying and neutering your pup is the surest way to ensure that no unwanted puppies are born. Nobody wants unwanted puppies. Nobody wants to euthanize dogs. That is a no-brainer. I also know that in the case of rescuing dogs, there might not be the luxury of choice when it comes to spaying and neutering dogs. Nothing I ask or say in this episode is disputing that. That being said, I believe that every person should be armed with the information that they need to make the best decisions for their pup. There's no going back from a decision to spay or neuter your dog, and it's you and your dog that will experience the potential consequences of your decision. So it should be an informed one. It's my hope that this episode will help you with that decision. Today's guest is Dr. Wanda Vockroth from Healing Traditions Holistic Veterinary Clinic in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. She also happens to be my veterinarian extraordinaire. She's the best. Dr. Vockroth is certified in veterinary acupuncture and homeopathy and has training in Chinese herbology, osteopathy, and rehab medicine. In today's episode, we'll be discussing all of the available options pup parents have when it comes to spaying and neutering their dogs. This is an extremely informative and eye-opening episode that you aren't going to want to miss.
You're listening to the Everything Pup Podcast, the place for dedicated pup parents to find valuable dog-centric tips, interviews with trusted industry experts and your favorite dog brands, and everything else you need to become an informed advocate for your best friend. Now, here's your host, Holly Montgomery.
Welcome back, everybody. It's my distinct pleasure to introduce Dr. Wanda Vockroth to the show today. Wanda is my very own vet, and it's been close to 20 years now. Do you believe it? Wow. 20 years, I know. Welcome to the show, Dr. Vockroth.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
I'm glad we're finally able to arrange a time. We had a lot of rebooks, didn't we? Mostly my fault, all my fault, to be honest, but... I'm glad to finally have you here.
Well, life happens. We know that.
Yeah, it certainly does. Okay, today's topic is a topic that I felt really passionate about for a very long time. And I really wanted other dog owners out there to understand their options when it comes to spaying or neutering their dogs. And when I got my first dog, it wasn't really a topic of discussion at all. It was just kind of assumed that we'd just have our dogs altered at the soonest possible kind of opportunity. And now, at this point in time, I have a rescue dog that had a pediatric neuter at the age of 7 weeks of age. And that was at, well, he was at a rescue. And I also have a dog that has not yet been spayed. And she is 7 years old, almost eight, actually. And I've learned a lot over the years about desexing dogs. And I have your knowledge to thank for that, a lot of that. And not everybody has a resource like you. So I'm really hoping this episode is going to give others a chance to learn from you like I have.
Well, hopefully I can provide some useful information for your audience out there.
I think so. Let's start with something really basic. Could you explain to our listeners what the procedures are like for just a traditional spay and a traditional neuter that would just happen kind of every day in every clinic?
Sure. The spay operation for female dogs involves removing both the uterus and the ovaries. It's an intra-abdominal surgery, so it is a pretty, you know, serious surgery. Most dogs recover from that pretty well. and it sets it up so that they will not go into heat afterwards, because that's a function of the ovaries. And they also won't spot blood anymore, anything like that. Which is, you know, a function of them going into heat. So it takes about 10 days for them to heal up. Usually tell people 2 weeks. And in that period of time, the pet has to be restrained, you know, kept so that she's not running around and jumping and maybe pulling her stitches and so forth. But then after that, they're healed up pretty nicely. And the neuter for a male involves removing both of their testicles. It's not quite as complex a surgery as for a female, although male dogs might not agree with that. the testicles are usually taken out just through a little incision right in front of their scrotum, which is, you know, that little sac they have near the back there. And then sutures are put in there. But still, it takes a bit of time for that to heal up. So we still have people keep their dogs, you know, quiet and just walk on leash and so forth for 10 days to 2 weeks after that. And then the other possibility is some male dogs are what they call cryptorchid, which means that one or both of their testicles are not actually come down into their little scrotums, but might be up in the abdomen somewhere. And then that makes it into a more difficult surgery, more like a spay, and sometimes even a little bit longer because you have to go looking for these little testicles. So in that case, yeah, again, it's you know, just the same kind of thing as for a female. You want to keep them really quiet for the 10 to 14 days.
Okay, awesome. And when you do these particular surgeries that you just chatted about, the sex hormones, they're removed, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, the main source of estrogen for females and testosterone for males, it comes from the ovaries and testicles, respectively. So once those are gone, so are the hormones.
Okay. And what is the currently kind of generally accepted recommended age for spaying and neutering amongst the veterinary community in North America?
Well, it is changing. I mean, for many, many years when I graduated and for a lot of years thereafter, it was recommended to spay or neuter somewhere around 6 months of age, between 6 months and a year. But in the last few years, there's been some change even in some of the more, you know, conventional veterinarians looking at waiting a little bit longer, letting pets grow up and mature a little bit more, and ideally waiting until they're at least a year, and for females, at least through their first heat.
Okay, great. That's great to hear. That's kind of a lot of what I want to discuss in today's episode. So I think that's really great to hear. One phrase that I heard actually, I don't know how long ago it was, but it was kind of a newish phrase for me, or a new description, I guess, was the pediatric spay or neuter. Could you explain a bit about what that means and if they're commonly performed?
So pediatric spay or neuters are really referred to any spay or neuter that's done younger than 6 months of age. But they can be done as young as, eight weeks. And even I think you said your dog was done at 7 weeks.
Seven, yeah.
And the reason that those are done mostly is for pets that are in shelters or, you know, some kind of a facility like that where they're going to be adopted out, but the facility wants to make sure that those pets aren't going to go out there and then reproduce, you know, as they get into the right age and make way more puppies and kittens that, you know, then won't have homes either. So that was right. The origin, I think, the origin of doing it in that fashion.
That's exactly what I've heard as well. So, and it makes sense. I mean, we'll talk about that a bit more later as well, but I just wanted to kind of get the message out. Sometimes, like, I've heard that pediatric sterilization can potentially lead to a number of detrimental long-term side effects. And I'll just list a few that I've researched. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but obesity, prostate cancer, hemangiosarcoma, hopefully I said that right, lymphoma, mast cell cancer, bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, endocrine diseases like Cushing's disease, musculoskeletal disorders like hip and elbow dysplasia, which is one I kind of have a bit of experience with, cranial cruciate ligament injury, and incontinence. Do you have any thoughts or experience on any of that? Is there any truth to any of it?
Well, so there have been studies in the last few years, and there was one big, well, they call it retrospective study. So the idea being, and it was through the University of California in Davis, and they gathered data from not only their own clinic, but from, I think, two or three other universities, you know, the university hospitals and clinics where, you know, numbers of animals come through there. And they have basically history on a lot of these pets for numbers of years. And so what they did was they gathered all the records and they started putting together when the pets were spayed or neutered and what problems they came up with later on. And they did find that there was significant increases in a number of those health issues, particularly in joint issues like hip dysplasia, and as you said, the cruciate ligament injuries, and then as well in some of the cancers, more so in the large breed dogs, but definitely it was statistically significant that they showed more cancers in a number of the larger breed dogs if they were spayed or neutered early.
So this could be a lot of the reason potentially why the veterinary community is kind of steering toward waiting a little bit longer.
I'm sure it is actually.
Yeah. I've also heard
science behind it.
What's that? Sorry.
That they want the science behind it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So what are the long-term effects of spaying and neutering a dog before the closure of their growth plates? I've heard this come up multiple times as well.
Well, the joints have to develop, and as you said, there's growth plates in each of the joints that to start with they're just cartilage, because that's where the joints or the bones have to grow from. When the person or pet is at their full growth, then those close and turn into bone. But if they're, it seems like we're knowing more and more about this, but there's effects of the hormones in order to modulate or regulate the growth. And pets that are spayed early, those bones actually will grow longer and sometimes be weak, sort of weaker. And then, of course, the joints may not be formed as well either. So when they're spayed too young, then it can definitely affect the joints particularly, and even, the bones. And that's where some of the concern, I think, comes from, even like the bone tumors, that if the bones aren't formed right, then over time that can be stressor on the bone and cause it to possibly, be more likely to form up a tumor later on.
And this would probably vary, because different breeds of dogs grow at different rates, this would probably depend on the size of the dog too, depending on the age.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. I mean, when they did those retrospective studies, it was definitely, significant differences in the large breeds, but not so much in the small breeds. So in any of those areas. Yeah.
Oh, really? All of the areas, not just the growth plates?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Interesting. okay. So we know we've discussed this a bit. There are situations where pediatric sterilization is unavoidable. And I was just wondering, is there actually any treatments that might minimize the negative consequences of the lack of hormones during growth?
There are sort of hormone replacement therapies, but we have to be careful with those, because especially with the males with the testosterone, if you start replacing testosterone, then you can run into some of the problems that why dogs are neutered in the first place. For instance, marking behaviors, sort of the whole male activities kind of thing. Possibly being aggressive. That's only a few dogs, but still. So that sort of thing. And there also can be other sort of physiological things. You have to be really careful with dosing and so forth. I mean, there are other things, like, for instance, there's what they call glandular therapies, where you're actually giving the pet that gland from, say, a cow or something like that. But unfortunately, those are a little bit hard to find in Canada right now.
Yeah, it's not surprising.
And there's other things as well. In fact, while I was doing a little bit of reading this last weekend, I came across a supplement called Hormone Balancer. It's from the Dr. Becker, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners know about. And it's got melatonin, lignans, and one other ingredient. But the problem sometimes comes in getting that into Canada, but still, there are other things like that out there. And the idea being that those will, you know, almost like support the body to produce precursors for hormones and things like that, because there is a real axis, they call it, between the pituitary gland and the adrenal glands, and then the sex organs. So if you actually supplement those basic things, sometimes the body can, I think, almost like produce sort of similar hormones to help support itself a little bit.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. I was actually going to ask you if there's anything more holistic on the holistic side that you could recommend, but Dr. Karen Becker's, that product is probably pretty, well, like you mentioned, it's just not kind of mainstream. It's a little bit off to the side a little bit, but that's awesome. I'll actually I'll find that online and I'll link to it in the show notes. So a lot of American listeners. So at least they have access to it.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe I'll dig around and see if I can find something similar for our Northern, us folks in the North.
Yeah, if you do, then let me know.
I will. One reason that's commonly used to convince people to spay their dogs is that intact females are at higher risk for mammary cancers. But I recently learned that there was a study done by the United Kingdom Journal of Small Animal Practice, and this was done in 2012, that concluded that there was not enough data to support that theory. Do you have any insight into that, kind of where that's at today?
There seems to be some, I guess you call it controversy about that. I, again, just because I thought I'd sort of check out what the latest was before we got talking here. So I did a little bit of reading this weekend and came across a couple of studies saying that they overall, you know, again, retrospective studies, whatever, found that dogs that are spayed younger than 6 months have very small incidence of mammary cancer. If they're spayed between the first and second heats, then it's a bit higher. And then if they're spayed after the second heat, it's higher yet. But the numbers were quite different in those studies. So again, I think there may be a little more chance of dogs developing mammary tumors when they get a little bit older. But frankly, I mean, again, most up until recently, I would say the majority of pets that I see, the females are spayed. But the ones that aren't spayed, frankly, I haven't really noticed that much of a more incidence in mammary tumors in the intact dogs. So, you know, that's just my experience. So.
Well, that's important because, I mean, that's what you've seen in your own practice. So it's kind of when the studies aren't very, I don't know, clear, is that the right word? Consistent, maybe?
Consistent is a good word, yeah.
you can only really go on your own personal experience. So it's definitely valuable. I've also been told that female dogs are at risk of getting pyometra. Did I say that right? I've always said pyometria, but it's pyometra.
Right.
Okay. What is pyometra? I say it wrong now every time. What is pyometra?
Well, that's an infection in the uterus itself. And we do see that, you know, intermittently, mostly in older intact females. I've been through a number of heats. What happens is that when they go into heat, the cervix opens, and so that, you know, if they need to get bred, then it can happen. And if puppies need to come out later, they can, whatever. But so the cervix opens, and then when they go, when they get through their heat and they're done with it, the cervix closes again. The problem being that sometimes bacteria and such like can get into the uterus, and then if the cervix closes, they can't get out. And so then those bacteria have a nice warm place to live and grow, and they can sometimes turn into an infection. And because even the body's trying to fight it, but there's nowhere for that matter to go, it'll build up there. And then it's just almost like a little pocket of infection sitting in the abdomen, and the body's doing its best to deal with it. But, you know, it's just sort of stuck there.
And so, it can be pretty serious, right?
Yeah, definitely. It can turn into just like a septicemia, like a whole body infection at some point or another. And it can be very hard in the kidneys. Symptoms end up being where females, usually it's within a month or two after, or up to 3 months after they've come out of heat. And then people notice that their dogs start drinking more for no reason. And then after a while, they don't want to eat as well because, of course, they're feeling sick. And they start, you know, feeling tired and slowing down. And that's often the time when the vet gets to see them. And we can usually tell with a blood test. And if it shows signs of infection and we have the right history, we do an X-ray and then we know for sure.
So if you do have an intact female and you see those signs around that time, it's really important to get in right away to see your veterinarian.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, next question, is it treatable if it's caught in time and what is the treatment?
Normally the treatment is surgery to remove all of that, including the uterus. So basically it's like doing a spay. So usually a lot more complicated, or you have to be much more careful because sometimes that uterus is quite large in there and you really do not want to disturb, you know, break it open or anything. So you'd be very careful about taking all that out of there. But once it's out, then normally dogs do need antibiotics just to fight any other infection that might have, you know, spread kind of thing. But they usually recuperate very well and end up going back to normal. It can actually, because the kidneys have to filter everything, it can affect their kidneys a little bit, but the earlier you catch it, the less chance of that being an issue.
Okay, good. So keep your eyes open. I'm making a mental note because of said 7-year-old female boxer that I have. Now, kind of moving on to the males, is it true that intact males run the risk of testicular cancers, prostate cancers? There's one here that I've written down called benign prostatic. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Enlargement and certain hernias. Is that true too?
Testicular tumors aren't very common. I have seen them, but I mean, and obviously if you have testicles, you're more likely to develop them if you don't.
I know what I was thinking.
But then the other things, so the prostate it's one of the male glands that's sort of along the urethra, and its function is to produce fluids to lubricate the whole tract, urinary tract. Especially the hyperplasia is reasonably common in intact male dogs as they get older, because the hormones stimulate the prostate to make those fluids, but also sometimes to produce more cells. And so then the prostate can become enlarged. And if it gets big enough, the problem is where it's situated, it can press on the urethra, which is the tract that goes from the bladder to the outside, and it can cause dogs to have trouble urinating. This is also a problem in humans.
Oh, really? Times. So that would be a sign also to get into the vet.
Exactly. Yeah. The cancers, statistically, again, there are studies that show that prostatic cancer is more common in intact males, but I have also seen it in neutered males. So it's not, you know, not the only time you'll see it.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I hear this a lot, and I've never had a male dog that's been intact long enough to really find this out for myself. So I'm going to ask you, is it true that neutering males can help decrease negative behaviors like urine marking?
Yes, that's one thing that is definite. Males that are intact have much more, you know, drive to prove themselves to be, you know, suitable for females in all sorts of ways, which includes marking urine, because it's like, well, I'm here. Hello. Anyway, but also, you know, things like mounting behaviors. And that's, you know, again, it's just sort of a natural behavior they have. But it's going to be more so in the males that are got the hormones to get them a little more driven again. Another thing that we see that is actually kind of a big factor, especially in dogs in the city, is that intact males tend to be kind of almost like a target for other dogs, where if you go into a park with a intact male, other dogs and even neutered males, especially neutered males, will come up and challenge them and often try and start fights, even if you've got the sweetest intact male in the world. So it's the hormones, and they can definitely figure out if there's hormones around from one dog to another. So yeah, so that actually I've had a couple of my clients anyway, that ends up being one of the deciding factors to go ahead and neuter their intact male so they don't get picked on by other dogs.
Yeah, and there's a consequence to that happening too. If that happens enough times, that sweet intact male is not going to be so sweet with other dogs eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of almost in a way kind of protecting them from that. Because I've had dogs with that issue, as you know. Yeah. And
well, I've had people go the other way and go, well, that's it. I'm not going to go to the public off-leash parks anymore and go to some of the private ones, and have really been happy with that.
We just did an episode on public off-leash parks, and actually there's quite a few downfalls of them. They're not perfect for every dog. So these private parks have been really a godsend for a lot of dog owners. So, and we're lucky in Calgary, we have a lot of them. So
that's it's great. Night. And I like your list. I use it all the time.
Oh, do you? Yeah. I'll link to that in the show notes too. It's, it's great. And I actually just found out about another park, and I'm going to add it too. So we've got more, we've got even more.
Right on.
You touched on this a little bit, but, I'm calling it a retained testicle. Mm-hmm. You called it, what did you call it?
Oh, the crypt orchid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fancier. Now, you were talking a bit about removing it in a traditional neuter, but what if the pet owner decided to, or the dog owner decided to leave their dog intact? Is there any risk to leaving that testicle there?
There, again, there's one or two small studies that say that that testicle has a bit more of a chance of developing a tumor. Which, you know, I mean, that would be the main concern, really. Other than that, it's, you know, if they're intact, that the retained testicle doesn't tend to develop as well, because it's a little bit up too warm up there in the body for it to do everything it's supposed to do. But they still, you know, can produce, you know, hormones and semen and stuff like that. But other than that, it's no difference as far as whether they're, you know, intact, or, you know, if they've got one testicle up and one testicle down, they're going to act the same and nothing else is going to be different.
Okay. Now, I'm really excited about this subject, because this was something I've just learned in the last, I don't know, 5 or so years, but there's actually lesser known sterilizing surgeries. And I'd really love it if you can kind of tell people the difference between these and traditional spay neuters. And the procedures I'm talking about are the ovary sparing spay, tubal ligation, and vasectomies. Could you tell us a little bit about the difference between those?
Okay, sure. So with females, there's a couple of different options besides doing the full spay, which is, the removing both the ovaries and the uterus. So one of them is to take out just the uterus and leave the ovaries behind. That's the ovary sparing spay. So with that, then the dog still has her hormones. She's still going to go into heat, and they still can spot blood, because if the blood comes actually from the vaginal area, not the uterus itself. Mm-hmm. So the only thing they can't really do is get bred and have puppies. So they're going to go into heat twice a year. And if they're going to have any behavior changes, that's still going to happen, because some dogs do have a behavior change when they go into heat. And again, they're still going to do the spotting, and they're still going to attract male dogs, but male dog can't really, you know, sorry about the barking.
Wanda's in her clinic, so you must forgive her.
Yeah. So anyway, so but they can't be bred. Then another option would be to take out the ovaries and then leave the uterus, which there's an idea that it's our rehab. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. Well, I don't even barely notice anymore.
Okay, right on. Anyway, so leave the uterus behind and take the ovaries. There's an idea that the uterus does actually produce a little bit of hormone, so the dog will still have a little bit. They won't go into heat, because the ovaries are gone. They therefore won't be spotting blood and so forth. But there's still a chance of them developing a pyometra, which we just talked about. So it's not, to me, a great option. So that's the sort of three different options for females. And then for males, that's where the vasectomy comes into play. And what a vasectomy is taking out a little piece of the cord that runs from the testicles, into the body kind of thing, so that they can't make sperm. So they're going to have all their normal hormone and activity, but they just can't breed. Well, they can't make a female pregnant. They can still actually try and breed a female. So yeah, okay. So that's the description of those things.
Do you get a lot of requests for these surgeries in your clinic at Healing Traditions?
We have some of our clients are interested in, especially the ovary sparing one. It works quite well for some dogs. We have also had people that had it done and then come back a year later and said, please take the ovaries out. Usually that's because of behavior. In other words, that the female, like their little female dog, goes through some kind of quite a behavior change when she goes into heat. Like some dogs will become quite clingy or whiny or actually kind of grumpy, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the heat can last for quite a period of time, even up to like 3 and 4 weeks. So if that's happening 2 and 3 times a year, then it can kind of disrupt the life a little bit.
Does. I've definitely experienced that. Pebbles gets very whiny and she also goes off her food a little bit. So, and then obviously the bleeding isn't fun, but
right.
Yeah. But yeah, so those things do not go away with this particular surgery. So that's right. Important for people to know. one thing I was genuinely wondering about is there a lot of veterinarians that can or will perform any of these surgeries, or is that kind of few and far between?
Some vets do. I'd say there's a few, and I'm not sure about far between, but yeah. One of the vets at our clinic will do it. He's not a big fan of it, but he will do it. It does take usually a little bit longer, so sometimes it costs a little bit more just because you have to be, you're doing sort of a different and more, a little bit more complex surgery than you otherwise would be. And there are, I know, one or two other clinics around town that will do that as well.
That was going to be my next question, because I was reading that because they're a little bit more delicate and intricate, that the surgeries do take longer, so they do generally cost more.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that people need to consider. So I always called it an ovary sparing spay, but I think somebody corrected me to say sparring, so now I feel like vindicated because you said sparing.
Well, as far as I know, I mean, because that's what you're doing. You're sparing, that organ, right? That little ovary in there. Leaving it behind.
And maybe it's like potato, potato, who knows?
Yeah, exactly.
If your dog has an ovary sparing spay, can they get a traditional spay at a later time? I think you mentioned that, that they can, but I was reading that it's a little more complicated to find the ovaries after the fact. Is that true?
Yeah, it is, because normally what you do is you follow the horns of the uterus. So you find the uterus right near the back by the bladder, and then you kind of follow those down to the ovaries, and then it's easy to pick those up and figure out where they're at. But then without the uterus, then it's sort of, they can hide a little bit. Plus sometimes if the uterus has been taken out, then there's a little bit of scar tissue. And so then you have to work around through that too. So yeah, so it can be a little bit more difficult.
Can a dog that's had an ovary sparing spay get pyometria?
No, actually, that's one thing that you don't have to worry about, because the uterus has been taken out beforehand. So
that would take away
one less worry.
That's good, because there seems to be a lot of things to weigh here. So that's one good pro. So I think we've discussed this too, but a dog that's had an ovary sparing spay, they will still have heat cycles, everything normal in that way. So if you're trying to get rid of behavior issues, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Now, I did read a scenario where somebody did this, and I'm not sure if it makes a lot of sense, but if a person wanted to wait to neuter their dog until, say, they're finished growing, could they in theory give their male dog a vasectomy and then later a full traditional neuter?
They could. I mean, that's quite possible. The reason for the vasectomy again is so that they can't actually breed a female. So, for instance, if they had, three or four dogs in the house and all of them were intact, the other ones were females, and then if they did the vasectomy on the male, they wouldn't have to worry about having puppies. And so they can just let the dogs do what they did naturally and, not have to worry about separating them and things like that. I think that would be probably the main practical reason I could see for doing it.
So it would potentially be an option for some people, but probably not all that common.
Right.
Okay. Can dogs with the ovary sparing spay or vasectomies still actually mate with another dog?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's another thing you're going to...
Yeah, and I mean, again, the female doesn't need a uterus to mate with a dog. It's not going to, it's still possible, and so they just can't get pregnant, can't have puppies, but they're going to have their instincts to do that, and they're still going to be going into heat. So yeah,
you could still walk in on something you don't want to see.
Yeah.
Now, I know the answer to this, I think, because we've discussed it before, but are you likely to recommend an ovary sparing spay or a vasectomy, and why or why not?
So usually I just go through all the options with people if they're interested, if they, start asking about it, and let them make their own decision. But I think I always say if it was my dog, this is what I'd probably do. And what I would likely do for my next dog, if it was a female, would be to let her have one heat, possibly two, and then spay her, because there's still all of the behavior things. And, again, the chance of them, having puppies if they stay intact with an ovary sparing spay. I've just seen enough cases where the owner afterwards was not happy about the dog still going through the heats and all the rest of it, that I think there's a reasonable chance of that continuing to be an issue. And one other problem with ovary sparing spays is that I've had one or two cases of this where a dog later in life developed cysts on the ovaries and started having issues. And so then it was like, well, why has this dog got enlarged mammary glands or enlarged vulva, and it's got behavior things? So we started doing an ultrasound, found enlarged ovaries, and then we had to go back and take them out anyway.
Oh, geez. Which would obviously have been preventable had they been removed to begin with.
Right.
What are your biggest complaints that you hear from dog owners that have intact dogs?
Probably the going into heat with the females and having to keep them separate certain times of the year. And obviously, you want to be really careful about going into like off leash parks and things like that, because accidents can happen quickly.
And people are on their phones a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So probably that mostly with the females, and then with the males, it's, well, the things we've mostly already talked about, mounting behaviors, marking behaviors, some, sort of inter-dog problems as far as, socialization or whatever, behaviors like that. I think that's sort of mostly it.
Yeah, we did kind of cover those, didn't we? But it can't be overstated, so it's good to know. Now, if a dog owner was to decide to keep their dog intact, what are the best ways for them to prevent an unwanted pregnancy? Like, I'm thinking for female dogs, how can you tell when they're fertile and should be maybe not going to doggy daycare or not going to the dog parks? When should they be separated for intact males? Is there like a timeline on their heat cycle or symptoms we can look for?
There's sort of various parts to the heat. And so the first part is, they call it the proestrus. And that's when dogs their vulva starts to enlarge and they start to drip some blood. That can last anywhere between 3 days and, a week, sometimes 10 days at the longest. That's, at that point, they're not in true heat yet. They're just getting ready. And they usually won't accept a male dog for breeding or anything like that. Then, and once they stop bleeding, that's when they're in their true heat. And that's when a lot of people make a mistake, because they think, oh, good, they stopped bleeding, they're gone out of heat. But that's exactly wrong. That's when they're now ready to get bred. So that's when I always tell people, you watch them when they get to the point of not bleeding, then you got to be careful. And that part, their vulva will still be enlarged and will stay that way until after they go out of heat. But that can last anywhere, again, between 5 days and 10 days or so. I would say just make sure, in fact, watch until the vulva starts to shrink, and then you're safe.
Okay.
So then when the vulva starts to shrink, then they're in their post-estrus period, and you know, things are getting back to normal, and they won't be interested in male dogs anymore.
And I've even noticed I have two neutered male dogs and an intact female, and my neutered dogs are still interested in her when she's in heat too. Nothing's happened, mm-hmm. knock on wood, but yeah. And if it did, nothing would become of it, but they still, it actually makes everybody in the house mental.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And I mean, that's their nature, is to respond to things like that. And even if they're, if the males are neutered, they still can smell the hormones and know what that's all about. And I mean, the other thing is that the hormones have quite a distance where they dogs can scent them. So they say, like, you know, like a quarter mile or something like that. Whoa. So you can draw males from a long way. So that's another thing, you know, for people to be careful about.
No kidding. That's crazy. And this kind of just spurred a question for me about false pregnancy. Is that a thing? Is that really what it's called? And if so, what part of the heat cycle does that happen in?
Okay, yeah. So false pregnancies are pretty common. And what that is it's after the dog's gone out of heat. And so it's like the body now thinks it might be pregnant, and it kind of retains the hormones that it should have if there was puppies happening for a while. For about a month. And sometimes people notice that their dog's mammary glands get a little bit bigger, and sometimes it even looks like their tummy might be getting a little bit bigger. Wow. But it's just all a hormonal thing. And then at some point the body goes, no puppies in there, so time to get back to normal. And the hormones will shift, but then it's almost that some dogs, they just go through that and they're done, and nothing, you don't notice any behavior changes. But other ones where they'll go through a little, almost like a little mini whelping thing, where they'll start to drag around a toy and sort of maybe even try and make a little nest in a closet or something like that. And they'll act a little bit oddly for a couple days. And then usually then they get through it and they're back to normal. But that's definitely, and that's exactly what's called false pregnancy.
That's how I heard of it, because I was concerned about Pebbles. Have you ever seen an egg baby? Do you know what those are?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, they're just like a tiny little stuffed toy about the size of an Easter egg that's got a squeaker in it. And she was carrying those around and digging in her bed and putting those in her bed.
Okay, yeah.
And it was actually really sweet, but also kind of sad.
Yeah.
But that's what I think I had ended up asking her breeder what the heck was going on. But it definitely hasn't happened every time, but it's happened before. But yeah, so I was just wondering if I wanted to ask you, being a veterinarian, if that was actually a thing, and just let people know that that can happen too, if your female's intact.
Yeah.
I always felt bad, but then I slapped myself. I'm like, she doesn't need to have puppies.
Yeah, right.
Just because she's such a good mother to these stuffed babies. Pebbles is never having puppies. I must put that disclaimer in there. this question is kind of personal. I admit I snuck it in for myself, but Pebbles is actually booked for her spay in April. And you may or may not know this. Like I said, she's almost 8 years old, and she's never had puppies. There's no intention to have puppies. And I just wanted to wait this time around because I had a 7-week-old male and a lot of leg issues. So it's just something I thought, I'm going to wait this time. And then it's just one more year. So I'm still sitting here wondering if I'm making the right decision. And I'm wondering if you've ever had anybody that's regretted spaying their dog at this point in time in their life.
I don't think so. I mean, the only thing, some changes that can happen, their metabolism drops by about 10 or 15%. So some dogs can gain weight. In Pebble's case, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, she's skinny.
I mean, they, so with the hormones being gone, some people will, especially later in life, some people will notice a bit of a behavior change, but most of the time, not enough to that they've really complained about it. So, yeah, I mean, every case is different, but if she does start to act a little, you know, oddly, and you're not happy with it, then we can work on some homeopathic remedies and some of the supplements and things.
Oh, that's good to know. I'm glad I asked. And I do believe we've touched on this a little bit too, but I would love for you to reinstate it because I think it's important. As a general rule, I know every case is different, every dog, every household, every situation, but what do you think the ideal age is for desexing both of a female or a male dog and why?
I would have to say between 1 and 2 years for females after they've had at least one heat and possibly two. And for males, if they're the larger breed, probably a little bit later. So maybe for males up to two, just so that we know they've got their full growth if possible.
Do you believe that our dogs would be better off health-wise if we could wait until they're at minimum sexually mature to spay or neuter them?
I think so. Yeah, I really do. And for all those reasons that we've been chatting about. Yeah.
You had lots of good reasons in there. So I think probably what we've come to the conclusion is that spaying and neutering is not a bad idea, but maybe the timing of it is the most important thing, just to minimize the different side effects and that sort of thing that we talked about.
I definitely agree with that.
I just wanted to say on a kind of a final note before we say goodbye, if you do decide to leave your dog intact for part or all of their life, it is your responsibility to be a responsible dog owner and not allow your dog to be accidentally bred. If we could all be responsible pet owners, maybe the problem of unwanted puppies would be greatly reduced without the long-term cost to our pets. So it's a very complex subject and we've only kind of just touched on it. So if you're curious, definitely be sure to continue with your research and talk to your veterinarian. Hopefully you have an awesome one like I do. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, Dr. Vakra, Dr. Wanda.
No problem. It was my pleasure. This was great.
I'm really glad to have you. I hope that you'll want to come back and we can scratch on some other really awesome subjects that would be really valuable to our listeners.
I'd be happy to.
Oh, that's great. Yay. All right. I'm Holly Montgomery. And my guest today has been Dr. Wanda Vakaroth. Thank you so much for listening and bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening. If you loved this episode, please subscribe and share with your dog-loving friends. The information in this podcast is not intended to replace veterinary care. Always consult with your veterinarian for diagnosis and treatment of your pup.